Welcome to another broadcast. It's liesoffice.com. Joining us now from Madison Computer Works, Brian Leese. Brian, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So, we've been hearing a lot in the news about a potential laptop ban. Actually, it's more than a potential laptop ban. We're talking about people not being able to use their laptops on flights coming in from all over the world into the United States. So are other countries going to reciprocate? What should people do about traveling with their laptops?
Well, there is a ban, but it's only affecting about 50 flights per day from 10 cities, mostly in the Middle East. They instituted that a while ago, worried about them smuggling a bomb in the computer and everything. That current ban just doesn't allow you to bring the computer into the cabin with you as carry-on.
Right.
They've still been letting you put it in the cargo, check it in the baggage and everything like that.
You know, that's interesting, though. In some respects, that's less of a controlled situation in cargo than it is in the cabin.
Well, what they're saying is that they scan and are more thorough checking the stuff in cargo, and they have equipment that will scan it more and yada, yada. The
right.
bigger problem is that, do you really trust putting your laptop into cargo and having them, I won't say monkeys or anything, but them throwing it around, possibly damaging your equipment. Likewise, in cargo, you don't get all the temperature control and compression and all that, which can damage computers. So a lot of people don't want to check it in for fear that when they get there, their computer won't work in checked-in baggage.
Well, and they've also seen how baggage handlers sometimes treat.
Well, that's what I was kind of saying. But what I was going to say is that there's about 65 million people from Europe coming through, and they have not had this ban with Europe up to this point in time. And so what you're hearing about is expanding this ban from people going to and from Europe. Now, with 65 million people going between Europe and North America in a year, you're talking about a lot of business travelers who rely on electronic devices during the flight to get their work done and everything, including their emails. There's a lot of internet, in the cabins now that they do and everything. So I mean, that could be a big problem for people. The answer is if they do it with Europe and you happen to go to Europe, I guess you'll just have to check it into the in with your bag and everything, because what choice do you really have? And pack it well and pray that that it makes it there in one piece.
Should people start thinking about keeping their older laptop when they get a new one that maybe they care a little less about when they travel?
I hadn't really thought about that. But that isn't a bad idea and everything. If you've got an old one that has your programs installed and then just keep your data on a thumb drive in case it is no good, well, then you can borrow a computer when you're out there. So just have a thumb drive, which I keep on my key ring, a thumb drive, and just copy your important data files on just in case. And then if you get there and your computer doesn't work well, then at least you have your data that you needed.
People replace laptops all the time, although you know what my laptops look like usually by the time I replace them.
Yes, I do, and you wouldn't want to keep those.
So this is very interesting that the terrorists have adapted to, somehow using computers as bombs. And, of course, a lot of people use computers for nefarious reasons. But computers are just so essential to our lives now, even those of us that are kind of illiterate with them.
Well, I mean, how do you get your email? How do you do social media or communicate with people? How do you pay your bills? How does everything done these days? It's practically with computers in this day and age. So, yes, I agree with you. Another thing I forgot to mention is that by putting stuff in the cargo hold like that with batteries that can, either swell or shrink or crack, they are increasing the risk of, those lithium batteries that were exploding. In my mind, I am thinking, boy, if they start doing that with tons of these laptops, what's the chances that they're going to actually, have cargo fires and stuff? Hey,
well, I remember you called something to my attention the other day because I have my laptop so you can work on it in a remote way. Right. What should people never do with their laptops?
Oh, yeah. People think it's a laptop. That means you should always be able to put it on your lap or on a soft surface like your bed or whatever, and the answer is you never put it on a soft surface. Number one, it pulls lint in and will clog your fan, but number two, it blocks the fans underneath so your machine overheats. So with your computer, because you have our remote, you know, our customer care plans, it popped up an alert saying your temperature of your, it was like 100-something, 180 degrees, something crazy of the temperature, and I called you up. And
I was making a pizza on my laptop.
Pretty much. And I called you up. I said, hey, I don't know what's going on with your laptop, but our alarms are going off here and everything, that your processor's overheating. I'm worried you're going to damage your processor and computer. What's going on? Is it plugged? Is it turned on? Are those fans? And that's when you let me know that you actually use it on your bed or in.
Yeah, I had to just, you know, I'm multitasking, watching, watching cable news and, you know, working on the laptop, then what I tell people laying around.
If you're going to do that sort of thing, like for myself, I like to watch TV and do my stuff. I put it on a cutting board or just a normal little board, so it's a hard surface. So there's no, it's, you never use it on a soft. You don't use it on a blanket, on a tablecloth, on even on your lap. Is it can plug up those fans and damage your processor as it overheats because it can't get airflow.
I found a nice big old coffee table book that I'm using.
Yeah, yeah. So a lot of people do that.
Whatever works. All right, that's just something you should always pay attention to. Brian Lease from Madison Computer Works. Brian, where are you located? What's your phone number?
353 Island Drive, out by Westtown there behind Brugger's Bagels. Our phone number is 608-231-8000.
All right. People are starting to talk about there's a change of administrations in Washington, at least for now. People are starting to talk about net neutrality again.
Okay.
I get very confused over net neutrality.
Okay. So net neutrality, in essence, I mean, is a good thing. It means that internet service providers can't discriminate or charge different rates based on the type of data that's being sent or who's sending it. So in other words, if Netflix is streaming a movie to you, they can't charge Netflix more than they charge anyone else for packets of data. It means treat all data equally. You can't play favorites and charge more. The only people who really want to do this are, you know, the cable companies, Verizon, you know, companies like that, because then they can make money, payoffs to give higher bandwidth or speed to large corporations to make their stuff run better. It doesn't help end users at all. I mean, if you got rid of net neutrality, you're just going to say, well, you think Netflix is, if they pay more money to get their bandwidth and everything, is going to, you know, pay that themselves? No, they're going to pass it on. So your rates for things will go up, but secondly, it really stymies innovation. Smaller companies can't compete because they can't afford to pay the higher prices for the faster bandwidth. So companies will never, you know, be able to compete with big corporations. So it would give big advantages to the larger corporations who have the money to pay for it and also can charge the customers then for it, and really stymie innovation. It's not fair. I mean, why should they be allowed to charge more to one person and less to another just because of the type of data that's being streamed?
All right. So is the Trump administration thinking of changing the rules the Obama administration put in place?
Well, they're looking at trying to I don't know if they're how much they're looking at everything, but there's been a lot of talk about them, you know, getting rid of the net neutrality. The FCC is trying to eliminate it and everything. And since it benefits the big corporations, the ultra-large ones, and when I say big corporations, I'm really talking more about the cable companies and Verizon, places like that. They have actually been softening their stance on, you know, on keeping net neutrality. In other words, they're talking about getting rid of it and making a two-tier system where they can charge two different rates, the cable companies and such, to companies to transfer their data.
Is this something you should call your representative in Washington on?
I think anything that you can do to try and keep net neutrality is a great thing. Now, there's been a lot of hoopla because John Oliver has really picked up the torch on this and has done a lot of, you know, videos and such on net neutrality, what it means, how you get involved with it. I did just earlier, I just wanted to take a look, and I did a Google search on John Oliver and Net Neutrality, and there were all these videos, and they're really awesome. So I would urge people to go and look there. Likewise, we post at our Facebook page. So if you go to Madison to our, like us on Facebook, in essence, we post everything, whether it's on Net Neutrality, whether it's on malware things like this new malware that's out, that's in all the news. All sorts of things in our industry. So, yeah, on Facebook, if you like Madison Computer Works, just like us, you'll get all the postings that we put out there.
Brian Lease with us at SliceOffice.com, talking about a variety of issues concerning computers. The ransomware story. Yeah. This is really an amazing story that's worldwide. Yeah. And there are things you can do about this.
Yes, besides WannaCry.
Which is what it was called, right?
Exactly. It's all puns intended. No, the malware problem has been around a long time. It's just the malware manufacturers have become much better at what they do and everything. They find little holes all over the places. So there are exploits that they take advantage of in operating systems. And if you don't have your patches on your operating system, let's say you're not getting updates, and you don't even necessarily know that you're not getting updates, then you are at risk on something like this. Like for you, you're on one of our plans, and where we monitor and remote support. So you actually get updates. We push updates and make sure that you're getting updates, not just of your operating system, but of your Adobe Reader or Flash or the different important things. But a lot of people don't do the proper updates and aren't patched, and they might have an old they may have port 440 open, which is used to, they exploit this port, not a port you need to have open on your router, but people don't know how to shut that sort of stuff down. There's a SMB 1.0 that's not used anymore that by default is activated that they use to exploit this sort of thing. So what I'm trying to say is that end users don't know how to protect properly against it. And although we do post stuff, like I had mentioned earlier, on what you need to do and how to do the best you can, if you're not getting updates and patches and stuff on your computer and patching the operating system against the stuff, yeah, you're at big risk.
Well, what about these big, companies that have been attacked, hospitals in Great Britain? Yeah.
Well, because they're exploiting things, holes and stuff, and until they... until it's out there that this exploit's there and the patches are there to patch the holes and these things come out, in that time that they have to run with it, they run, the malware makers I'm talking, run with it and get as much as they can. Well, it's easier to go for a big target than a little. Not that they won't go for a bunch of little ones, but boy, if you can get a hospital, that's pretty critical data, because you don't ever want to pay extortionists, to get your stuff back and everything. So the best thing you end user could be doing is making image backups, not just a data backup and everything, but I'm talking about an image backup of your hard drive so that if something happens, you can blast that image back and then get your data, the latest data back onto your machine. I have so many people saying, well, I've got Dropbox, so I've got it backed up. You think if you encrypt your data on your machine and then that encrypted data goes up to Dropbox, that what you have in Dropbox is going to be good? No, that's not a valid backup method. That will not protect you against this sort of stuff. Matter of fact, your data is going to be encrypted on every computer you share Dropbox with. So what I'm trying to say is there's proper ways to back up a computer and others that aren't proper, that aren't really a backup. At our website, MadisonComputerWorks.com, in our white pages, I have a whole thing on backups, different types, what the differences are, cloud backup versus, image versus just, data or robocopy scripts. And I would urge people to go to to our website and actually go to our FAQs, FAQ, white pages on it, and just read the thing on backups. Because you should be backing up your computer, if not because of WannaCry, but just because what if your hard drive crashed then? Forget about malware. You need to be having backups of your computer.
Where does Microsoft come into all this equation?
Well, Microsoft, because they have the most operating systems out there, on computers and everything, is the largest target. If you're going to try and poke a hole in anyone, you want to get 99 out of 100, not 1 out of 100. And so they're the largest target. It's not that they write horrible operating systems or anything. It's that people who want to get in, whether it's into a building or into your computer, are going to find any hole or any method of doing it that they can. Now, once they find that and they start exploiting it, then Microsoft has to say, whoa, I got to patch this hole right here. That's what I'm talking about with operating system patches and stuff. It's security, you know, for your system.
Should you be running Windows 10?
Well, Windows 10 is the latest operating system from Microsoft that they're fully supporting. I mean, they're still doing Windows. Let me back up. They still support Windows 7, but I think it's only about 2.5 years left of that and everything before they're saying it's going to sunset and they won't be doing patches. So if you have Windows 7, they're still doing, you know, full patches for that. It is Windows 7, Windows 10 also. I don't know. Windows 8 I wasn't a big fan of, but they have, you know, patches for that. So anything from 7 up right now, they are still doing patches.
All right, but are you automatically immune from these, you know, vicious attacks, ransomware, if you're upgraded to Windows 10?
No, not at all. Because don't forget that that's just one vector through those little holes and everything. I mean, they try and find every little way of getting onto a system, you know, with different types of malware out there. So, like, your email is a vector. People who just open an email because of it's from somebody they know. Like, there was a Google one recently that came to people.
Sure.
And you click on it, and then it launched you into your Google account and sent out to everyone that you had in your address book, you know, the same infection as an email and everything. Oh, that's from somebody I know. And they would click on it and run it. So in this case, you know, that was the Google one. These malware makers are just insidious.
That is that is difficult to comprehend, that this war is going to keep going forever, right?
Right. Well, and it will. I mean, and the bottom line is there's always been people who want to steal rather than earn a proper living and everything. And they used to be they had to break into your house to steal from you. Now they can sit in their little chair and break into your computer and try and steal your whatever, you know, hold your ransom, your data, or steal your credit card or your banking info.
Let's talk about Madison Computer Works and what you offer to help people. You know, there are a lot of people that have computers that they're not into computers. They're a utility. I'm more into cars than I am computers.
I understand that, but I mean, how do you live your life
right
these days without it?
Absolutely. Okay. So that's why I use Madison Computer Works, because you focus on things that I don't.
Well, we keep on top of the industry, the technology, what needs to be done. You know, I had mentioned earlier we knew your machine was overheating and called you up to warn you. We do that for all of our customers who are on our managed care plans and everything. We call it our customer care plans. And, I mean, it's not expensive plans, but they at least enable us to remote in, take care of problems or alert you when there are problems. And it's a local company that you know and trust. It's not just somebody, you know, remoting into your computer, a faceless person halfway across the country or sometimes in India, taking your machine. Most of the time those are scammers anyway. What I'm saying is there's a legitimate reason to have that kind of support from a local company versus somebody you don't know.
And what, $100 a year or so, right?
That depends. There's different plans with
different plans.
Features, right. Yeah. Our least expensive is about $120 a year. That's correct.
Right. And how do you set this up?
Well, we can do it remotely if somebody calls in. A lot of people like to stop in with their machine, have us take a look at it. It includes a copy of anti-malware protection, you know, high-end anti-malware protection, not just some freeware that doesn't do any protection, you know, but actually cloud-based endpoint protection. But they like us to just take a look at it, install the plan, go over it with us and everything. We can do it by email or remotely, too, but it is something we do recommend for all of our customers.
And this is for desktops, too.
Oh, yeah. Desktops, laptops. We have businesses. It's actually kind of going crazy because people love this kind of service from a computer store.
Even businesses.
Even businesses, especially businesses.
All right. What's your phone number and what are your hours at Madison Computer Works and where are you located?
Well, we are open during the week from, technically it's from 8 a.m. in service, I'm talking, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. Sales is 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. and everything. It's 353 Island Drive, right off Mineral Point, you know, right behind Brothers. And our phone number is 608-231-8000.
All right. Ryan Leese from Madison Computer Works. Thanks for coming on the show.
Hey, no problem. Anytime.
All right. Sly'sOffice.com.
Sly'sOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
Making stuff matters because when we make things in America, America makes it. American workers and families make it. Our communities make it. Consider this. For every one manufacturing job in our communities, five more jobs are supported. Manufacturing jobs pay an average of 10 to 50% more than service sector jobs. That allows working families to support their local businesses, schools, emergency services, and more. Creating 2.5 million new manufacturing jobs would mean at least $100 billion for our economy over the next decade. Domestic manufacturing is the green economy. It's among the cleanest, most efficient, and productive in the world. That's why the United Steelworkers and our more than 1 million members and retirees are fighting so hard to protect and grow manufacturing. Because making stuff really does matter. Join our fight. Visit usw.org and like us at facebook.com/steelworkers. Support American manufacturing. Buy American. Buy Union.